And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of September 29th, 2021. So most people are more familiar with our topic than they realize. Many people have what's called a gas stove in their kitchen on which they make their oatmeal and cook their dinners. I mean, a gas stove is a classic thing. That gas stove is driven, uses something called natural gas, which is a deceptively innocent name for something called methane, or if you're British, it's called methane. But methane gas is what comes into your kitchen to drive your stove. Many people, myself included, have a gas heater in their house that uses natural gas to warm the house. Fine. About 10 years ago, actually about 20 years ago now, engineers in the geology business realized, or they discovered a way to drill sideways. That is to say, they could sink a drill into the ground, go down 150, 200, 300 feet, then take a right turn and head off in a predetermined direction and drill some more, which is a remarkable thing when you think about it. They couple that with the idea of putting pressurized fluids down there to crack all the rocks and then let this natural gas or methane flow back up. And that was the fracking revolution, which was a big deal. At the time, the methane gas was basically sold as a bridge fuel, because the thing about methane is that it has less carbon in it than coal. So, and therefore the carbon pollution, the global warming pollution when you burn the methane is less. So people said, oh, this is the great thing. We have this now. It'll get us to where we need to be when we have windmills everywhere. But it turns out that it's not such a simple thing, that just the method of producing methane is by itself lets enough of the methane get into the air. And the methane itself is a terrible, terrible greenhouse gas before you burn it, even before you burn it. Anyway, 20 years later now, we're left with this big mess with lots and lots of infrastructure of companies producing methane, abandoned wells, states that are very cooperative in protecting these industries from any kind of regulation. And we are faced with the prospect of figuring out what to do with this bad climate thing that's happened over the last 20 years. So we wanted to find out more about that. And because of that, we are very happy to have with us an expert, someone who knows what they're talking about, as opposed to me that has a long backstory about what I think I read somewhere. We're speaking with Sarah Smith, who is the Program Director for Superpollutants at the Clean Air Task Force. Sarah has a long experience in environmental stuff. She worked at the EPA. She worked at Clean Water Action. She has a degree in environmental studies from Yale and is a graduate of Dartmouth College. So we're happy to have an expert to tell us more about methane. Sarah, how are you doing?
Hi, Ted. It's great to be here.
Great, great. So tell me, my long and rambling story about methane, did I get it more or less right? Or the question I think is before us is, why should people care about methane in a context of climate change?
You did get it right. And people should care about methane because it's super potent greenhouse gas that is fueling a huge amount of climate change right now. In fact, every pound of methane heats the planet more than 80 times as much as a pound of CO2 over the next 20 years. And the 20 years coming up really matter when it comes to not just bending down the emissions curve, but bending down the temperature curve. If we don't do that, the science is telling us that we could pass irreversible tipping points and self-reinforcing feedbacks where the Earth heats itself up. So methane is finally gaining more attention because it's a challenge and a bad thing, but it's also an opportunity because reducing methane is our big chance to slow down warming over this critical upcoming window.
Really? Okay. So this 20-year time window is also folded into how urgent it is to think about methane. And Sarah, maybe you can explain. Sometimes people who care enough to look we'll see different numbers about, you know, the potency of methane, the global warming potential of methane. You quoted a number that I agree with, which is more than 80 times more potent than CO2. But then you hear other numbers that are less. Why is that? I mean, what's the skinny on that?
Yes. So the latest global warming potential number is more than 80 from the IPCC, which is the International Climate Change Science Body. But you're right that outdated figures are still being used in some contexts, including by government officials. As the science improves, though, we know that methane is a lot more potent. And altogether, these comparison numbers, I think, are a little bit of a distraction. I think what we should be focusing on is actually the temperature impact, because we have to be doing, when you look at it that way, it's clear that we have to be reducing both methane and CO2. And this latest report from the IPCC really shone a bright light on methane, showing us that methane is contributing about half of the net warming that the planet has experienced since the Industrial Revolution. So everyone's focusing on CO2, which is important, but methane is half the pie and just has been flying under the radar despite its huge contribution.
Wow, that's and that is further remarkable, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, because you know, the gross large-scale methane emissions have only started in the last 20 or 30 years where this fracking stuff has gone on, right? There's been methane around. Cows have been, you know, chewing their cud for a long time. But the ramp up in the presence of methane in the atmosphere is noticeable, and that's relatively recent. Isn't that fair?
You're right that methane is surging in the atmosphere. There is some uncertainty still regarding why it's surging, especially so quickly, with some studies that I agree with pointing to fossil fuel development as a major contributor, but probably not the only contributor. Increased agricultural production, increased emissions from wetlands, this is all possible, and probably part of the story.
Right. This is the famous cows, you know, letting off gas as they digest, right? This is the famous knock, but it turns out it's a significant contributor of methane, which then takes us down a whole path to talk about, should we be eating so much meat, right? There's everything's connected. So, but if we go back to the question of the industry that is producing the methane, it seems to me, can you maybe describe how the methane gets from the, what happens to the methane as it goes from, say, the Marcellus Shale to my kitchen, right?
That's a great question. And the answer really is the story of why there are so many methane emissions from this industry, because it's a long path that starts at the wellhead where the gas is produced out of the ground and where there can be substantial leaks. There can be flaring, which is when gas is lit on fire to get rid of it. When the company is really going after the oil, can be vented straight into the atmosphere. You have storage tanks that can also release a lot of methane, compressor stations releasing methane and CO2 and other pollutants, pipelines that are transporting the gas that can also have leaks and that also need to be maintained, which can result in blowdown emissions when the gas is intentionally removed from the pipeline to lower pressure and allow for that maintenance to occur. And also methane is released from a wide range of other equipment across this complicated supply chain, all the way to your stove that you mentioned, Ted, in your house, which is not free of emissions either, and quite problematic because it's so close to us and the air we breathe.
Sarah, I can't let the reference to a compressor pass without hitting the drum once on the Weymouth compressor, which is right south of Boston, and is exactly the situation that on a regular basis, those guys will literally open all the valves and let the methane that's in the pipeline shoot into the air. And there you go, just raw methane at 86 times the carbon dioxide potential. You know, that's craziness. Tell me this, correct me if I'm wrong again. I was surprised reading a report, CATF put out a report in June about benchmarking. One of the major causes for the methane emission, this is sometimes called fugitive methane or methane, you know, unwanted emission, is that they use the pressure of the natural gas to drive the equipment. So this famous picture you see in movies of the what do they call it, a donkey bouncing up and down on the plains, right, with that thing going round and round and round, that is basically forced by the natural gas pressure, which is then just vented into the air all day long, right? That's an amazing thing.
Yes, multiply that by hundreds of thousands of these pieces of equipment in the US alone, these gas-driven pneumatic pumps and valves that release methane to the air as part of their normal operation, like you said. And none of this equipment is necessary, but it's still being used.
Now, I have seen the other piece of information that's becoming more and more common, I've seen more discussion about it, is that when you do finally, you know, fry your eggs in the morning over a gas stove, what comes out of burning that gas is not good for your health, right? That there are these nitrous oxides or NOXs, there's like all kinds of bad stuff. And I guess what scared me thinking about it was that you turn on that little valve in your kitchen and all of a sudden the gas starts flowing and you say, you know, that that's a straw that goes all the way back to 300 feet underground in Pennsylvania somewhere. And God knows what radioactive crazy stuff is making its way through that pipeline right into your kitchen, right underneath your food. Is that something that you're familiar with or you could comment on?
Yes. It's important for people who do have gas stoves to use their hoods and ventilate the space as much as possible. And for folks who are particularly concerned, switching over to an electric range is a safer option.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Wow. So people should care about methane because it is a very intense greenhouse gas. It seems as if the industry is not doing the right. So the industry, in quotation marks, are the people that drill the wells. And tell me, is that very how shall we say, highly regulated? Are there a lot of players? Are there big players, small players? How does the leakage, shall I say, of methane spread across the different companies?
Great question. Before we go there, I just want to add one more really important reason why people should care, which is that methane is an ozone smog precursor, and it's forming air pollution that is killing hundreds of thousands of people prematurely every year. And it's also causing kids to have asthma attacks, not just near the well, but really across the whole US, because the ozone doesn't stay put, it travels. So this is an issue near and dear to my heart as someone who studied public health. And then in terms of the regulations, vanishingly few requirements, unfortunately, especially for all of the
existing. Sarah, let me interrupt. Forgive me for interrupting the smog thing. I just want to say that just to go back to connect the methane gas. So you say methane gets out. Smog is a simple name for a chemical reaction that occurs when you put all this junk into the atmosphere and you add some heat. I mean, the famous thing in Los Angeles, right? The smog in Los Angeles, you've got heat, you've got all this exhaust, and you make new stuff, new bad things that are typically called aerosols or particles, right? The little tiny particles, and they're made of like solid nitrogen oxide and all these things, right? Is it correct? So please, can you, is it possible to briefly describe?
Sure.
It's not just like methane goes out in the smog. I mean, there's this whole chemical chain of really bad stuff that happens. And that's what gets to your child, right? And that's what people should be aware of.
So methane is a hydrocarbon. It's a volatile organic carbon that can react with sunlight to produce ozone, O3, which is a toxic gas, and it's harmful for our lungs. It hurts the lung cells. It also hurts plants. So all of this ozone being produced from the methane is harming people around the world. Raining in methane could save 250,000 lives globally every year, just through this one pathway of ozone reduction, not even including the climate piece and the direct human health harms from heat waves, et cetera, et cetera. So this really is a big health issue. And in terms of crop loss, that also has health implications.
I mean, this is so interesting, Sharon. I'm sorry for like keep bumping us into different directions. But I mean, when I was a kid, we had electric trains, right? Christmas time. And the trains always had a funny smell, right? When they ran. And that's the ozone, because the little motor was making ozone, which was not particularly damaging, right, at that level. But I know from other experiences, I mean, ozone, I was in a doing some work one time, and we had an ozone leak, right? And the ozone really can ravage your lungs, right? It's very caustic stuff. And exactly. It smells, it's got that, and you can sometimes smell the ozone on a really polluted day. So,
and here in New England, we often have high ozone days throughout the summer season. And some of that is actually a result of air pollution from the oil and gas industry across more western parts of the country that is traveling to the east.
My God, we know that. We know that that phenomena happens because we were all sat in Boston a few weeks ago smelling the fires burning in the Pacific Northwest, right? So that we know that that stuff drifts eastward. Interesting.
Exactly.
Wow.
We can't escape, even here.
Yes. So forgive me, I interrupted you. I think you were going to talk a little bit about the different players in the natural gas industry.
Yes. And the lack of standards. There are some rules for new sources, but there are no requirements that companies address the methane emissions from all the existing wells across the country, existing pipelines and so forth. So that is a topic that is being looked at by policymakers now, and we're hopeful will be addressed there. When we look at different companies' performance, if you will, or emissions, there is wide variety, with some companies starting to take this seriously and going out and finding and fixing their leaks and updating their equipment and at least trying to rein in flaring. And other companies that really haven't taken any steps at all, unfortunately, a real variety.
And that's, I would imagine, and this is me talking, I would imagine that people that are in the business of doing the fracking don't really have much sympathy with the idea that the methane gas is doing any damage. And so there's almost probably a perverse pleasure on their part in getting away with as much as they can. One other question I had for you. Much of our discussion is based on a very impressive report that was generated in June of this year about oil and gas production. And one of the things that I saw in the report somewhere was a discussion of the basins, quote unquote, the word basin, right? And it showed like across the United States, these 15 different basins from which the different kinds of natural gas comes from. And my question is almost geological, right? When we talk about a basin, so many people here in New England are familiar with the Marcellus Shale in Pennsylvania, right? That I think is a basin. But I mean, these different regions that produce methane. So there's like the Permian Basin, I hear it, right? And there's the Bakken something up in
the Bakken.
The yes. Bakken, right? Are these geological features or are they politically defined?
They are geological features. Really? And they are variable in their emissions, partially because some, like the Marcellus, are gas basins, whereas others, like the Bakken and the Permian, the San Juan, are really oil fields.
Really?
And what we find are that in the oil fields, the methane pollution is even worse because companies are mainly after the oil. And so taking much less care to capture all of the methane.
Really, really, really. That's fascinating. But I mean, and at the same time, it reflects sort of this hidden subsurface geology of all these structures that you're not even aware of, right? That sort of a little, I imagine basin is some sort of cupped bowl kind of thing that has this. Interesting, interesting. Well, I think that, so the question, not so much a question, but the realization that people who are concerned about climate need to worry about methane. And because for these reasons, I hope you can come back and talk some more, Sarah, about what can we do about this, right? We got this horrible problem, all these crazy small producers leaking methane across the country, you know, the political power behind it. We know that the reconciliation bill, as we speak, is being hammered into law. There must be some policies in there. So I guess my question number one, are there, and can you come back to chat about what those policies are?
Absolutely. There are solutions, and I'd love to come back and talk about them and the policies.
Super, super. So what we'll do is, what I'll do is put up, Sarah, links to some of the stuff we've talked about in the blog, the MCAN blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. Tell me, if people do better listening, where would they go to find out more about the problems you've been, the solutions you're offering? Let me put it that way.
Sure. Folks can visit the Clean Air Task Force website at www.catf.us.
.us. That's a very modern site, right? It's not com or org, it's a .us, right?
Somebody else had .com.
If you have a question about the show or suggestions about things we should be talking about, please send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know what interesting topics we should be pursuing. Of course, you're probably listening to the show on your smartphone using one of the modern streaming apps. Please ask all of your friends to listen to the show on their smartphone using their favorite modern podcast distribution apps. That's your Climate Action for the week. We want to thank our good friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. And we want to close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investments, and a price on carbon that respects environmental justice communities. If we do that, we'll safeguard our collective future. So, Sarah, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Ted.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.